Okay, I'm Craig DeSessa. I'm 61 years old, and today's date is June 24th, 2021. I am located in Ashland, Virginia, and Lee Farmer is my conversation partner, and my relationship to her is she is my OSS conversation partner.
And I am Lee Farmer. I'm 42 years old. Today's date is June 24th, 2021. I am in Chesterfield County, Virginia. And Craig DeSessa is my conversation partner. And he's an OSS conversation partner.
So am I go first, Courtney?
Thanks.
Okay. So Lee, why did you want to do this? Or is this question for me or for Lee? Okay. Why did you want to do this interview today?
Excellent question, Craig. I wanted to do it, I think, because there are many reasons why I think it's important to have a conversation with somebody that I don't know. But I think the state of our world right now, it's important for us to show examples of civil discourse. I think there's a lot of noise and a lot of yelling, but when we sit down and listen to each other, that's when we really learn. So that's why I wanted to do it. Why did you want to do this interview today, Craig?
Well, for similar reasons, I happen to be in politics, and as we all know, it's very divisive. And I've had some ugly things said about me over the years, and I've tried to be civil in responses and things like this. And I agree completely with you. It's important that there are examples of people who may come from different experiences in life, have different views on life, to be able to have a conversation. The other reason is I was encouraged by my pastor, who is at a church called Hill City Church in Richmond. Mm-hmm. We meet often, and he said, "Yeah, you would probably be good for this, and it would be good to try it." So, those are the primary reasons.
Jeez, that was a lot. Okay.
Okay, I'm still reading. Yeah, I'm still reading hers. Oh, I'm to read it out loud. Okay. All right, so I'll go ahead and read Lee's bio. Okay. Hello, there are several lenses with which I could probably introduce myself. I'll use my adult path. I started as a television, small market reporter that worked in small conservative areas around the country. I met my husband at my final news station. After that, I decided I wanted to start planning for the future. I began working in nonprofit PR and never left. In that time, I married my husband, conservative former military, and now a lawyer. Together, we are raising our little girl.
And Craig's bio is as follows. I am 61, married to the love of my life, and we have three grown children. I became a stay-at-home parent when we had our first child in 1993 and remained in that role until our youngest graduated from high school. I helped found a nonprofit called the Middle Resolution in 2009. We are a political action committee involved in elections and public policy. I am presently the president. I became a Christian in 1994. My faith has guided me all of my life, of all of my life decisions and positions on relevant cultural issues. I got to tell you, Craig, I read your bio and it didn't have as much in it before, but I read your bio before this and I totally thought you were going to be a woman.
Stereotypes. Yeah.
It's awful. That was really, so when I saw you pop up on screen, I was kind of like, okay, now I understand.
Well, I can give you the short story of how I got to be the stay-at-home parent is I married Heather in 91 and we were living in South Florida and she had an opportunity to move to New York City with a job, which at first we said, that's nuts. Why would we do that? But we did it. And when we got there, I had sold my business in South Florida, small construction business building tennis courts. And I was looking for jobs in New York City, and I got an opportunity to work for American Express selling their card to restaurants. And I'm like, I do not want to do this. And so I told her this over dinner one night, and we'd had a glass of wine or two, and I was kind of joking. I said, Danny, I'll tell you what, I could be the stay-at-home parent if you want. And she looked at me and said, that would be great. And that was literally a 10-second decision we made, which was probably the best decision we made of our marriage. And we had our first in 93, a daughter, and the rest is history. We have three kids, two boys and a girl. And in 2009, I got approached by some folks here in Hanover County to get involved politically. And so that's what I did. And it was a good timing for us as our kids were getting older and so forth. So I had more time. So that's kind of how that all came about.
I know. That's awesome. That's really cool. It's special that you got to spend that much time with your children as they were in their developmental stages of life.
Yeah. How old is your daughter?
She's seven. She's seven and a half. And she is going into second grade. She's the reason I changed my whole career around too, I think. Thanks to COVID, I've been able to be work from home, still bringing in an income, but it's way more flexible than it used to be. So it's nice to have that time with her.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have found that COVID has provided obviously a lot of changes for people, but in a lot of ways, it's been very positive. And you talk about one of them. I think parents are finding that being home with their kids, finding out what they're learning has been helpful for them. And maybe opening up their eyes in some of the cases where the kids are learning things that maybe they didn't really want their kids to be learning at this point in the stage of their education. So it's been a good thing. I did not expect you to be so close to us or to me here. Yeah, you're a neighbor basically, if you think about where Courtney is. So
That's true.
that's interesting. And I feel like when I saw your face that I had met you before or had seen you before. I'm not sure if that's the case. I don't know where we would cross paths, but I felt like I had met you
Maybe
before.
we'll figure it out before the end of the conversation.
Yeah, could be.
I went to Randolph-Macon College for 2 years.
Well, my son just graduated from there, and we are very we're pretty involved over there. As in fact, the woman who is the president of the board of trustees is one of my wife's closest friends, and she will be actually staying here tonight because she lives in Philadelphia. So when she comes down for meetings and stuff, she stays with us. So we are very engaged at Randolph. Not as much since our son graduated, but still
Sure.
think very highly of the college.
I transferred out my junior year for a lot of personal reasons and ended up graduating from Virginia Commonwealth University, which is where my path took, communications path went from there. But anyway, looping back around to what you said about COVID and children, I definitely think there are many blessings to be had there, and that's what I kind of hey, that's what I want to remember. I want my kid to remember out of all of this is she, and she's at the age where she thinks that it's normal that we do this. She just says it's pandemic times, like it happens every 5 years or so. And which is it's an interesting age, right? So she started kindergarten and left kindergarten halfway through, and all she's known is pandemic. So when she went back to school, she couldn't hug her friends anymore. She couldn't get close to anybody. What was it? Oh, they couldn't sign yearbooks this year because of COVID. And that's all normal stuff to her. Like it wasn't as traumatic as, say, I have friends that have seniors in high school, that really felt it, but she left this morning to go to summer camp. She goes, "We're allowed to hug at summer camp."
Oh, and she liked that, I assume.
She loved the idea. Novel concept.
Oh my gosh. So we have a new question here. Who has been the most influential person in your life? What did they teach you? I'll let you go firstly.
Oh, thanks. I would say for this one, I don't have one person that's been extremely influential. I think every person I meet influences me in some way, shape, or form, whether it's a deterrent or an attractor, if that makes sense You know, it's either something that I'm really on board with or something that affirms that I definitely don't like this. You know, my parents obviously should have influenced my life a lot. But my daughter has really shown me a new way of looking at the world. I didn't have her until I was 34. And I now am much more of an optimist than I was before she was born. So I think for me, that's probably the closest you're going to get to someone that influences my day to day. What about you? Who's the most influential person in your life?
Well, I would agree with what you said. There's more than one person. I'd say I would start at the top with my father, who passed away 6 or 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, was somebody I looked up to, had a lot of respect for. But unfortunately, he traveled a lot. And so my mom raised 5 kids, not on her own, but a lot. So my mom obviously had a huge influence. And she's still around. And I talk to her on a regular basis still, even though she lives in Florida. But then I would say also when I became a Christian and when I developed a relationship with Jesus Christ, his teachings have a huge impact on who I am today. I was not a very different person, but I became a person who understood why I believe in what I believe. And then, of course, you mentioned your children, and clearly my children have become a huge influence on my life because they showed me a lot of my faults. You know, as you strive to raise your children, you start to learn, you know, oh my gosh, I make a lot of mistakes. Fortunately or unfortunately, my children are pretty bright and they like pointing out my faults. In most cases, they were probably correct. So that's had a huge influence on me. And I hope my children today, they're all 23, 25, and about to be 28. I have good relationships with them. I'm very blessed that they live nearby. They're all in the area of working. They're gainfully employed, which is always a real prayer for a parent.
And oh, yeah.
So that's a great thing. But I hope today they would say that their father has grown tremendously over the years.
Yeah. I mean, when you say that they point out your faults, do you hear them? Do you correct? Do you say, no, you're wrong? Do you debate it at all? Or is it usually?
It's been it's all of the above, right? If it's in the heat of the moment, usually it's, you know, you're wrong. If it's a more calm situation, which we try to create as much as possible around here, which is not always the case, but we'll have that conversation. But I do have the benefit of experience and wisdom. I hope that I do, and so it's, you know, those conversations can go in a lot of different directions. But I do listen more than I used to, and they're older and smarter too. And you'll find, and you probably found this with your parents, your kids get to be 21, 22, they graduate from college or whatever. They all of a sudden realize, oh, look, mom and dad are a lot smarter than I thought. You know, what happened? So that happened with me and my parents and my siblings as well. So, but yeah, the conversations go in a lot of different directions. It's best, obviously, to have those conversations when everybody is calm.
Yeah.
That is for sure. Because in the heat of the moment, it's not the best. And I think we all know that.
It's definitely a gift to be able to teach your children how to have this kind of conversation, a respectful debate without taking it too personally and getting heated. And that's an art form that I think we do a disservice if we don't teach our children how to have that.
I completely agree with that. And that's something as a parent, we really need to focus on is teaching our children to be able to have constructive conversations and not pointing fingers. I mean, it's a natural thing for a human to want to be right all the time, right, and then find fault with others. And I told my son years ago, he was picked on by a girl. This was kindergarten, first grade, and second grade. They rode the same bus. They were in the same Sunday school class, and they were in the same class in school. And this young lady was just, she was an unhappy little girl. And she would pick on my son all the time because he was a great target. And I told him, I tried to explain to him, I said, you know what, she probably has something going on in her life that we have no idea what's going on. And that's probably why she's taking it out on you. She finds you an easy target. And I said, you just kind of course, I try to teach my kids grace. And it came to find out much later that her parents were going through a very difficult divorce. And actually, they got to travel together to Latvia on a mission trip. And her father and her, and then my wife and my son, traveled together on a mission trip that it's an organization called Camp Hope Worldwide that we're involved with. And they became friends. Now they were, let me guess, they were probably 4 or 5 years older at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But Ian, when he found out about what happened with her, he became much more understanding of her situation. And then they became friends. Now they're not friends now because they've gone in different directions, but teaching your children that there are things going on in other people's lives that they may not be aware of are part of who they are and why they act the way they do.
I need to remind myself of that sometimes. I don't know if you do, but you know, whether it's being cut off at a traffic stop or, you know, seeing someone act out in public, it's hard for me to remember, and I try to remember, but it's not always there, that person's going through something that I don't know anything about, and give them space, because you can't give them anything else at that point.
Yeah, I think that's that is great advice to give to anybody. I've mentored young men that are the ages of my sons for years through, you know, Bible studies and things like that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've always taught them is, you know, try to have conversations with people you don't always agree with. And remember, they could be coming from a very different experience than you. And that helps forms their opinions and who they are today. I actually had that conversation about grace with my oldest son yesterday, because there's some people have done some things to him. He's in real estate and they didn't use him as their agent, even though he'd worked hard to help them find a house. And in the end, they chose somebody else, and he's very mad at him. And I said, this is an opportunity to show grace, because they're friends.
Right.
So
that's hard. That's hard when you, and the real estate market is so dang competitive right now. It's tough. I wish that we would take what we've just been talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
This opportunity to learn, this opportunity to just kind of stand back and listen into the spectrum of the way we govern, the way we make decisions. It's very hard to do that. It's easier to do that in a microcosm than it is to do it in a larger space.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get up to Washington, D.C., it's hard to sort of pinpoint and figure out everybody's motives politically. And everybody has a good reason for what they're doing, but I just wish I could understand it more, because then maybe we could see some middle ground. And I don't think there's much middle ground right now. And that scares me for my children. That scares me for my daughter.
Yeah. There's obviously the political environment, and just in general, the cultural environment is very divisive, as you've identified. The organization, and I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but I'm not trying to plug our organization, but we're actually called the Middle Resolution.
Yeah, that interests me.
Yeah, and we originally came together. Now, we are conservative. We support mostly conservative candidates, although there's been a Democrat or two that we've wanted to support, but it would hurt them in their campaign if we came out and said we support so-and-so. So we get behind the scenes and help them. The idea was to try to bring people together on issues that we could all agree with.
Mm.
And originally, our first couple of meetings, we had a number of people that were on the left. And we don't, not on our executive committee. On our board, we do, but not on our executive committee, which was where we make most of our decisions. And we tried to find issues that we have agreement on. One of our biggest issues is education choice, providing more options for families in the education world. And I have worked with NAACP on these issues. I've worked with a number of Black pastors in Richmond, the city of Richmond. I do a lot of work in the city on this issue. And so those are some of the ideas and areas that we can come together
mm-hmm.
on. And we've tried very hard. I've worked on a piece of legislation actually got passed, I want to say last year, maybe the year before, where it was what we called it alternative accountability for students that do certain things, basically assault in a school. They either nothing is done typically, or they're assigned to the resource officer, which then has to report them. Mm-hmm. And so we were trying to find a middle ground where this child could be given some sort of a path to reform their behavior. And it actually got passed down to General Assembly. So it gives principals an alternative to how to deal with it, with the situation.
That's and really great.
It's been very successful in Fairfax and that kind of thing. So now I won't say that we're in the middle, if you think of the political spectrum, but the whole idea was you have tyranny and you have anarchy on either ends of the political spectrum. And we firmly believe that the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence are really that balance between the two, the perfect balance, which we'll never get there. But if we could, that'd be great. And we believe that was a great start for this country, a great start for this experiment that we have here in this country. And if we can't get back to that, I'm fearful that for our children, especially for your daughter, it's going to be even tougher for them. It's going to be even tougher.
It is. And I think starting with trying to find common ground is the most important part, because once you're able to civilly discuss one topic, that opens the door to learn how to discuss other topics in a more civil manner. Just to lay the foundation for political beliefs here, am I right in assuming that you are pretty conservative?
Yeah. I mean, I hate the labels, but yeah,
I know
it's conservative in my beliefs as far as public policy goes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I am, I'm liberal. But the older I get, the more fiscally conservative I get. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, we're a family that has two businesses. We own two and operate two businesses, and a lot of money goes to taxes. So when it comes to that sort of stuff, I sort of see the broken system and the money that we're putting towards that broken system. And I want to fix it so that the system works better. I often say to my conservative friends, you know, we need to stop debating the small issues, because really the bottom line is it all needs an enema and we all need to start over and work on ways work on better solutions, because the solution that worked 50, 60 years ago isn't what works now. It's not what jives now. Things are different. Situations are different. So I enjoy the policy that you got that was passed, because it is a different way of looking at it. Now the onus, though, is on the principal to sort of figure out what works best for each individual student. And that's a lot of responsibility for one principal to figure it out.
It is huge. And especially in the environments. I mean, if you're up here in Hanover, it's not as difficult, but if you're in Richmond City, which I've worked with many, many kids in Richmond City, and their challenge is their home environment and what they're coming from. And how do you help them? Because, you know, imagine coming to school, not having had breakfast, or mm-hmm. there had been some violence in the night before in your neighborhood, mm-hmm. You know, hearing gunshots, or, I mean, I've even known kids where their friends were killed, you know, 13, 14, 15 year old kids that we've had at camp. I mentioned Lafayette, we do the same camp here in Richmond, and we do it in Costa Rica. And Richmond by far, I mean, or the United States, I should say in general, is much more violent than those other two countries. Mm-hmm. Even though those kids deal with a lot of abuse and alcoholism and things like that, but the violence here is much worse.
I wonder why though. What's the root cause? Is it, you know,
Well, that's the big question. And we've had many conversations around that. And I think most people that go to camp with us, and we take our kids are part of the ministry as well. And I have my own opinions about that. I think part of it is we've become much more of a faithless society, whereas in Latvia and in Costa Rica is mostly Catholic, but it's Christian. In Latvia, it's still Protestant, but again, the kids are growing up with a faith more so than here, and we're taking it away. And I'm not talking about taking it out of schools or anything like that. It's just we're moving away from that type of foundation. And the kids, for example, in Costa Rica, they're poorer than the kids in Lafayette are poorer than the kids in the United States, much poorer. They have much less material things. But we have social poverty here, and that's a real problem. And there they don't have it as much. They're raised for the most part in two-parent families. They're raised, and I'm talking about the other countries, and they're raised with some sort of a faith system. And we don't, here we're moving away from that. And so I think that kids are just, there's nothing for them to identify with. And that's one of the reasons gangs are so strong here. They're looking for somebody to identify with. So I'm speaking a lot, probably too much, but that's sort of where we came down on from campaign's right. perspective.
I don't wholly disagree with you. I think faith in any way can help shape your morality. I think where we go at it wrong in the United States is that our faith is punitive. And a lot of times we are legislating on faith instead of principles and the actual situation at hand. And, I'm a Christian. I go to church. I work at my church. But I would not be so apt to want to be at that church if they were constantly telling me I'm wrong about my decisions, if they were constantly browbeating me about my decisions. Now, I think when you're talking about inner city Richmond, or quite frankly, Chesterfield, my husband's a criminal attorney. The stories he comes home with every single day are no.
Yeah.
And as a person that's had a lot of trouble having children, I often ask God, why do you give these children to people that obviously have trouble raising them? And what's my purpose? Why didn't I get that choice? Why didn't I get the chance to raise children? Because I want to take a lot of them and just bring them into my home. And I know you're damaged and I know you're broken, but let me help fix you the right way. And a little faith goes a long way with a lot of those kids, I'm sure. And I'm sure that if grace were given to them on a daily basis, mm-hmm. and they continue to make those mistakes, but they're continuously trying to do better, instead of saying, nope, you messed up, you're out, or you don't believe in this, you're out. But just continuously showing them love and affection, and that would go so much farther than what's happening in their lives right now. Taking it up the political spectrum, and I don't want to go I don't want to go into politics with this, but it's legislated, or it's trying to be legislated, and I think it just turns it into the devil. I think it turns it into a bad thing. For a lot of people.
I would agree. One of the reasons I got into policy was 2011. And I was a young a boy, 11 years old at camp. And we used to go out to Scottsville for this camp, and we would take 200 kids. And I was a senior counselor for a group of 11-year-old boys, which I will never do again. I don't have the energy to spend five nights and 6 days with these kids.
You've earned your spot in heaven, friend.
Yeah. But two boys named Josh in my group, one was passive aggressive. The other one was very aggressive. And the aggressive Josh ran off in the middle of camp one day, and I had to chase him down. Mm-hmm. And I say chase him. I followed him till he collapsed. He was sobbing and so forth and so on. And I asked him, I said, hey, what's going on? And he said, well, everybody's a bully to me. And it was the opposite. He was the bully in the group. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, has anybody taught you how to deal with, some of this conflict stuff? And he looked at me for the first time that week and said, Craig, you know how we deal with conflict resolution? And he used that phrase. So he'd been taught, right, mm-hmm. about conflict resolution. In my house, we use knives. And he showed me a 6-inch scar on his forearm.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Well, that was my response. And I had no idea how to deal with that. We have since trained our folks on how to deal with this, but I had no idea what kind of life he was going through. And so I started doing my homework, and you mentioned it a little while ago, a lot of this comes from public policy. Why are the cities the way they are? Why are things better in Hanover or Chesterfield than most places? And public policy is a big part of that. And that's why we were originally just involved in elections, and then we decided to get involved in public policy. And education system is clearly And a good education is a path for a person to escape that poverty. And why is it that Richmond schools perform so poorly? And it became clear to us that providing more options for family, we weren't going to change the public schools overnight because it took them a long time to get there. But if we could give them more options, like St. Anna Julia Episcopal School in right across from Creighton Court, it's a great little private school that is doing wonderful, wonderful work. How can we promote that and improve it? And it's been very, very difficult at the legislative level. In fact, we stopped trying to do it because it kept getting vetoed. Stuff kept vetoed by the governor. And we ended up bringing our own private school here to Virginia that has a very low cost. They're actually building one in Chesterfield. And
Really?
it's called Thales Academy. And actually, your daughter is perfect. Look for it on the website. I guess Chesterfield County website, but we brought it here to Henrico, and they started it in a church. It's K through two, and now they're going K through three. It's full time, so it's year round. And the folks that developed Thales out of North Carolina have decided to build a permanent school system here. And they go K through 12 in North Carolina. Kids are going to the top-notch colleges. Tuition $6,000 a year.
So
So,
the kid has to be able to afford to get in, or are there
no,
scholarship
no, no.
opportunities?
So we this Thales has never done this before, but we started offering scholarships for kids in Richmond. And so we have, out of the 35 kids, I think there are six or seven that are coming up from Richmond, and we have a generous donor who's paying for the scholarships. This school does not rely on any federal, local, or state money. It's an incredible business model. It's all run by tuition. And there are some large donors who get the ball rolling. So the first building is, I think they found they're closing on the property in Chesterfield. I have no idea where it is yet. I can find out, Lee, if we're allowed to communicate afterwards and let you know where it is. But it's the most exciting thing I've done since I've been doing this since 2009, since I've been
Well,
involved
it's
in it.
actual tangible work that's being done, right? You can see the results right in front of you. And it kind of shows, it's a good little case study about what actually makes a child successful, what actually has them growing. You know, the one thing that we haven't talked about that's a huge part of my life is mental health. My dad was a psychologist. My sister's a school counselor. My grandfather was a psychologist. I mean, I could go on. I am not a counselor, but I do a lot of nonprofit PR work in the counseling world. And what I can tell you is one of the things that really a lot of the children we're speaking about suffer from is trauma in a way that sticks with them mentally and physically. And when they don't have tools for resiliency, that trauma, it is the imprint in their lives that determines their success. And so I hope, if you haven't already, consider having counselors in those schools that are trauma-informed counselors who can really determine the wraparound services these children need to not only survive but thrive as adults.
That is great, a great suggestion slash comment. We do not run the schools. Once we brought them here, we convinced them to come to Virginia. They had not been in another state outside of North Carolina, and the founder is a visionary. He's a very wealthy businessman who went from a rags to riches story, and it's a great story. And education became his focus in their late 90s, but they had catered mostly to middle class because that was the largest segment market for them, market segment. And then we had encouraged them to look at bringing in what I call at-risk children. And they said, actually, we talked about that. We would like to see if there's a way to develop that model. So because we're doing that here, I do believe they're going to need something like that. And that's a great question. The woman who runs this is a woman named Ashley Dundas. I haven't spoke to Ashley in a while, but I do need to follow up with her. And I will ask that question because I'm sure she's discovered that has been situations that these kids, they're coming from some more difficult environments. Now, I will say what I observed with the kids coming out of the city, they have parents who care very much and want their child to have a really good education. So my guess is at home, it's a pretty decent environment. That's my guess. I don't know for sure. So I'm not sure if, you know, they're dealing with some of the extreme stuff that you would get out of a place like Creighton Court or Mosby Court or something like that.
So, Greg, just so you know, what I'm really talking about is called adverse childhood experiences. And we all have them. So even you, who probably grew up I'm assuming a lot here, but grew up in a fairly good childhood environment, because your mother was the primary caretaker and your father was gone a lot, that puts you on the ACEs scale. If there was any sort of conflict or injury, I mean, it's amazing. I'm on the ACEs scale, and I had a great childhood. My father was a psychologist, but my parents are divorced. That puts me on the ACEs scale. I'm sure if I went down the list of crap that's happened to me over the past 42 years, I could give you some ACEs. My dad will probably roll his eyes when he sees this because I'm not very high on the scale. But I'm just saying that there's an actual math met. What's exciting about it for me is for years we haven't been able to measure trauma like we measure blood pressure or our cholesterol. And now we're able, this is the first time where we've had tangible evidence of what your childhood experience can do for the rest of your life, both physically and mentally. And so it's the most exciting thing for me that I've seen in my million years in mental health, just as an observer, because the people that don't believe in mental health, there are still those out there that think it's taboo, that don't believe that, it exists. And now it's really kind of hard to deny because we can follow the trajectory of someone and how long they'll live based on what they've experienced as a child.
That's interesting. What is the ACEs scale? How do you spell it and what?
It is an acronym. So ACES, Adverse Childhood Experiences.
Okay. So with the camp counselors, we've been training them on competent, what is it? Trauma competent care, something I can't.
Very similar. I'm sure it's in the same.
And how to deal with a child with, like I just described a little while ago. Because we recognized, you know, you have to really be trained in how to help a child deal with that. And I would agree with you that probably every child has to deal with some sort of trauma in their life. And I would assume the scale is the lower your score, the less trauma you've had, and the higher the score, the more you've had. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And you can take
Adver
a test online, I'm pretty sure, to find out how messed up you are.
Yeah. There
You
would be people in my family that would argue I'm messed up. Okay, ACES. I'm sorry, what was it again? The
A
break.
adverse childhood experiences.
Adverse childhood
The other adult version of that is mental health first aid, which I believe that anybody that is in public service needs to know. Because a lot of what happens, what we see on YouTube, what we see on the news, mental health crisis, people not getting the help they need. And now I'm on, you went on your political, you told me about your political. Your PAC organization, and now I'm telling you about my passion. But I mental health first aid is slowly been rolled out in Virginia to police officers and to first responders for the past 7 years or so, and has been legislated and required, I think, in some places. But it's basically the mental health version of Red Cross first aid. We recognize when someone is going through an episode and you figure out how to help them, de-escalate them, and get them the help they need.
Right. I knew that the police were getting this kind of training. I don't know the details of it, and I didn't even know the name of it. As I've talked to my sheriff often, and he's talked about it a little bit. But you know, it's interesting. I was talking with we are interviewing candidates that are running for office coming up in November, and several of them have talked about you know, we asked them, well, what is your policy, you know, platform kind of thing, and many of them have talked about this. So I think there's greater awareness. for this, and people are recognizing what you're stating, that we've had huge challenges on this. One of the questions that she brought up that we haven't talked about is maybe we should touch on, do you ever feel misunderstood by people with different beliefs than you?
Yes. I have, for whatever reason, accidentally surrounded myself with a bunch of conservative human beings, including my husband. I came from a very liberal family, a family that loves everyone just the same. And I'm not saying that they don't love everybody just the same, but a very welcoming, open family. I married a conservative. My best friend's a conservative. And I find myself on Friday nights sitting with them. And before I can even open my mouth to be a part of the discussion, they go, "Oh, we know what you're going to say. We know what you're, nope, no thanks." And I'll say, "Wait a minute, I get to talk now too." And what I love about those Friday night conversations is that we end up learning from each other, but they always assume right off the bat that I'm going to have something in their mind that's ridiculous to say about the conversation. So I'm constantly misunderstood. What about you?
I don't run into it that often. The only time I've run into this is where people have become very aggressive. They show up at a meet, they come up to one of our meetings and they start screaming Nazi and things like that at me. And you try to have a conversation with them and they wouldn't even shake my hand. And I'm like, so it's not for me, it's not worth my time. If you're not going to have sit down and have a dialogue, I'm not going to waste my time with you. And I don't say it that way, but I'm just going to say, okay, well, I'm sorry, we disagree on this. I'd love to have a conversation. When you're ready to do that, please come back and we'll talk to you some more. But for the most part, as I mentioned, I work with folks in the NAACP and other organizations that typically are diametrically opposed to a lot of what we're in favor of. But the goal is to find a common ground. In fact, I'm having conversations now with these folks, and they want to talk about certain things about police reform. And it's gonna be tough to find common ground. But at the same time, they're willing to have that conversation. They know that they need to have that conversation as well. So I don't run into that very often. And when I do deal with when I work with Democrats in the legislature, it's usually people I've gone to and said, "Hey, I think you might be interested in this." And to some degree, they are. And they may not always agree. They may not vote for it, but at least we can have a conversation. One of the things I would encourage you to read a book called "The Righteous Mind" by Jonathan Haidt, and the subtitle is "The Reasons People Pick Their Politics and Their Religion." And he's got a TED, he's got a bunch of TED Talks, but it's a great, it helped me as a, it really helped me understand where other people were coming from, why people believe what they believe. And I don't think he has all the answers, but he breaks it down into a moral matrix. We all have, there are about, he believes there's seven moral values that we all have that sort of guide us, and that liberals tend to use different moral values than conservatives, but we all use them, but we just use them at different levels. So, The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt, and that's Haidt.
Unfortunate last name.
Yeah, it is kind of funny, isn't it? Yeah, I noticed that as well. Maybe go see one of his TED Talks. The one I there's one he's got out there, it's about 18 minutes, and he talks about the five moral values, but he's increased it to seven since he did that TED Talk. And
You found two more morals.
what's that?
You found two more morals.
Well, he didn't
Is that
find
like
them.
finding
He
two more planets?
now he found what he did. He didn't find them. They existed, but what happened was he realized these are moral values that people use to develop their opinions on things like politics and religion.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
It
yeah.
definitely it gets you into the mind of somebody else and to figure out how they're
It
feeling.
does. It does. You and I have a sister who is very liberal, who and she was raised in a my father and mom are pretty conservative, but she lives in Manhattan. And so, after 25 years of living in Manhattan, she's been around, surrounded by folks who are very liberal, very liberal. And so she's sort of adapted to that for various reasons. And but I have I now have a much better understanding of why she's become the way she has.
You know, there's an old Time article from 10, 15 years ago that basically says your life is guided by the way your foundation and the way you grew up. And you're either really attracted to the way you grew up. It's comfortable, it's good, feels great. Or you think the way you grew up was totally wrong, like you disagreed with everything, you never saw eye to eye, and then you split from that. And that's the way that's who you become as an adult. And I'm not doing it justice, but it's a fascinating article. If you could look it up, you can find anything on Google. But it kind of it spoke to me because my sister and I love each other dearly, but grew up to be very different people for that reason, I think. It's actually about siblings and how they shape each other too. But anyway, we've got about 5 minutes left, and I just wanted to thank you for this. I was really nervous about coming on here and having a conversation. And right off the gate, you surprised me with being a guy. So, well done on that.
I didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't have anything to do with
No
that. Can't help it. I couldn't help
pronouns. No pronouns was the problem.
it. Yeah. So, well, and Lee, it's been great to know you too. And I would encourage you, if you're interested in Thales, just look it up, Thales Academy.
Yeah.
And it'll take you to their North Carolina website, but I don't, they'll talk that there is a web page about Thales and Henrico right now, but and they may not have mentioned Chesterfield yet in it, but my understanding is that they've purchased property. They're about to close on the deal. So they're actually moving the school. The goal was to have it in Henrico, but the cost of land is so expensive. And I happen to have a very good friend who runs Chesterfield County, the administration there. His name's Joe Casey. I don't know if you know Joe, but when I told Joe about Thales, it's probably been over a year ago, he became very intrigued. And the next thing I knew, because he didn't tell me he was doing this, he got him to move it to Chesterfield. So, which is great. I'm so happy for Chesterfield. So anyway, it's a great school, and it's gonna take off. And
Awesome.
they're gonna build their first building, and that's gonna be the K-5, I think. And then they have a high school, a middle school, high school building is what they have in North Carolina. And it'll be nearby that one. It'll be like a campus, is my guess.
Well, good, because we've got a lot of kids around here that need it. And if there's any way that I can help facilitate identifying those children or any sort of counseling that could add to that education, I would be happy to help. So I don't know
You
if
know, let me I don't know if we're allowed to share personal contact information. Is that allowed, Courtney?
go for it. We'll share it
Okay.
after we're done recording so that no one finds us.
So I'm going to give you my personal email.
Okay.
Okay, and it's JOSTL at
We want to,
Comcast. Here, I'll type it in here for you.
yeah, tape it in the thing.
And that's my personal email.
Okay.
Okay, and then wait a minute, it's not there. And I'll just mention Thales here. That's my number. And Thales Academy is the school. And
Okay.
no, I think especially since we are bringing kids, well, and I don't mean to just pigeonhole them, that the kids that come out of the city are the only ones with drama, because as you've pointed out, everybody has drama in their
Everybody
life.
has stuff.
Yeah,
Everybody has
everybody has
stuff.
stuff. So and I'm gonna contact Ashley Dundas at Thales and talk to her a little bit about this as well, to see what they've come up with, if they're doing
Yeah.
anything with it. So
All right. Well, thank you again. This has been a good conversation. I appreciate it.
thank you very much, Lee. I really appreciate you doing this.
I think we're done, Courtney.